Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in 2 Chronicles chapter 13. This chapter is about Abijah becoming the king of the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, to remind you again, and be at risk of sounding like a broken record, remember that the kingdom after Solomon died, the kingdom of Israel, split from top to bottom. That means that there was the northern kingdom where 10 tribes went, and the southern kingdom where 2 tribes went. The northern kingdom left under Jeroboam. He was Solomon's foreman, and he led the nation into pagan idolatry. Meanwhile, Solomon's son Rehoboam, foolish king that he was, reigned and died. So this chapter is about his son, Abijah, the grandson of King Solomon, the great-grandson of King David. And the whole of this chapter is the aftermath, the war that happens after the kingdom splits, and how Israel stops hemorrhaging people. To set the stage, we're told in the very beginning of the chapter that Abijah and Jeroboam go to war. The problem is that verse 3 tells us Abijah went out to battle having an army of valiant men of war, 400,000 chosen men, and Jeroboam drew up his line of battle against him with 800,000 men, chosen, mighty warriors. Talk about being outnumbered 2-1. That's exactly what the problem was. But the chapter is not done, and God hasn't turned up yet. There's a great scene in the movie Braveheart starring Mel Gibson, who plays William Wallace, native son of Scotland, who fights for its freedom against English oppression. Lining up for battle, the English on one side and the Scots on another, William Wallace goes to meet the diplomat on the field of battle, who wants to avoid fighting at all costs by giving titles and lands to keep the people under. When his friend asks him where he's going, as William Wallace rides off to join the lords, who will easily cave in and receive the bribes, he responds, "I'm going to pick a fight." When the nobles meet together, William Wallace says things that are so rude that a fight is inevitable. Well, that's what happens here in this passage as Abijah and Jeroboam draw up the battle lines. In verse 4, like William Wallace, Abijah stood on Mount Zemaraim in the hill country of Ephraim and said, "Jeroboam and all Israel, listen to me. Don't you know that the Lord, the God of Israel, has given the kingship of Israel to David and his descendants forever by a covenant of salt?" And by the way, if you're reading that, salt means that it's going to last forever. Salt was a preservative, and agreements were often made with salt as a symbol that this will last forever because salt does not decay. In verse 6, we pick up, "Yet Jeroboam, son of Nebat, an official of Solomon, son of David, rebelled against his master. Some worthless scoundrels gathered around him and opposed Rehoboam, my dad, son of Solomon, when he was young and indecisive and not strong enough to resist them." Now, the first thing to notice is that Rehoboam's interpretation of why his father lost the kingdom is not our interpretation. Yes, he was young and indecisive, but he was also an idiot. He didn't make a wise king, and his foolishness cost him the kingdom. He could have kept it if he had answered that situation differently by consulting wise men. We can be like Abijah. We often look back on our own failings or those we love and their failings, and we reinterpret events to suit ourselves. After all, sometimes the truth hurts. I mean, how many times have you heard one family side of an argument and not listened to the other side of the argument? Families, after all, split, and when they do, everybody picks their sides. Well, we would much rather tell a convenient lie like Abijah than sort through the painful aspects of an inconvenient truth. But that said, Abijah actually makes some great points in his speeches here to Jeroboam and the northern kingdom of Israel when it comes to their idolatry. Now, Jeroboam was no fool, and he knew when all the priests left to worship God and go down south because that's where the temple was, he knew that he was going to not only keep hemorrhaging Levites, but with it the people that were afraid not to worship God because they knew that worshiping God brought blessing. Therefore, he was hemorrhaging people. People were literally defecting to the southern kingdom. So he told them that they could worship God up north, just like they did in the south. Now, You would have thought that Jeroboam would make a copy of the temple. In other words, he would go back and he would make a replica of the temple that was in Jerusalem. But no. Instead, he goes back further in Israel's history and decides to kick it old school, hearkening back to the days where Aaron made a golden calf. Except, this was paganism 2.0. So he didn't make one golden calf, he made two. Yeah, for real, he made two golden calves. He would have made a great American who believed two is better than one, and bigger is better too. Go big with your paganism, or go home. So, he made two golden calves, and said, "Behold, the Lord your God who brought you up out of Egypt." He was pretty sure that the only thing better than one golden calf was two, so with that, he kept the people up north who felt they could still worship God up there and get all of his blessings. But that sets the stage for what Abijah is about to say next. Verse 8, "And now you plan to resist the kingdom of the Lord, which is in the hands of David's descendants. You are indeed a vast army, and have with you the golden calves that Jeroboam made to be your gods. But didn't you drive out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron and the Levites, and make the priests your own, like the people of other lands do? Whoever comes to consecrate himself with a young bull and seven rams may become a priest of what aren't gods. As for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him. The priests who serve the Lord are sons of Aaron, and the Levites assist them. Every morning and evening they present burnt offerings and fragrant incense to the Lord. They set out the bread on ceremonial clean tables and light the lamps on the golden lampstand every evening. We are observing the requirements of the Lord our God, but you have forsaken him. God is with us. He is our leader. His priests, with their trumpets, will sound the battle cry against you. People of Israel, do not fight against the Lord, the God of your ancestors, for you will not succeed." And meanwhile, while all this talk was going on, while Abijah was making a speech, Jeroboam was busy surrounding the armies of Judah. So they found themselves in an ambush, and in verse 14, they cried out to the Lord, and guess what? No surprise, they won. Verse 16 tells us what happened. "The men of Israel fled before Judah, and God gave them into their hand. Abijah and his people struck them with great force, so there fell slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men. Thus the men of Israel were subdued at that time, and the men of Judah prevailed because they relied on the Lord their God, the God of their fathers. After that, Abijah pursues Jeroboam, takes cities from him, and it says in verse 20, Jeroboam did not recover his power in the days of Abijah, and the Lord struck him down, and he died." Well, here's the amazing thing about this. No matter who you are or when you start, God is always ready to pick up his covenant. And in fact, believer, you're going to see that being a theme all the way throughout this book. Thanks for joining me today for 2 Chronicles chapter 13. We'll see you tomorrow on Through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.